So, this is Vibe Drive episode 137, and it marks the return of one of the single greatest creators of all time in tech YouTube. He's here, he's live, he's next on Vibe Drive, which starts now. What's up, people? This your boy Viper, the man about tech, and welcome back to another episode of Vibe Drive. This is the podcast about tech, hosted by the man about tech. And today, the man, the myth, the legend returns to the podcast. One of the single greatest tech creators of all time, with probably the most famous five initials in the history of tech. My man, Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, is here. What's up? Welcome back, man.
Thank you for having me on. I like your headphone choice today. Is that the Sony's you got on?
These are the MXM3s. I have the SM4s in the other room, but yeah.
Okay, I got the Mark IVs going. So yeah, we're already on the same page.
Yeah, we on the same page. I like that, man. I like that. How you been, man?
I'm good, dude. I mean, it's November finally, so we survived a heavy Techtober, but it was a good time, so that's so good.
Man, you have been putting out content left and right. You have been beasting, man. I respect that, man. You already know.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
No doubt. So, I know y'all, a lot of y'all that are watching and listening are here for the tech, and we're going to get to the tech, but we got to go with some non-tech stuff, but we got to go with some real-life creator YouTube stuff first. So, Marques, on Friday night, I did I do my Friday night live stream, and this past Friday, I was talking about the title was Redirect Your Hate, and the message I was trying to convey in that particular live stream is that the example I was using is that LG just sent out a round of LG Wing to reviewers, including myself. I have an LG Wing to review now. A lot of other people got an LG Wing to review. But as you know, every time there's like a bunch of review units being sent out to media and creators and things like that, there are other people and creators that, you know, sometimes they hate on other people getting these review units. Or they critique, they're like, well, how did you get that? And I didn't get that, this, that, and the other. And the message I was trying to convey on Friday is that maybe if you take some of that hate that you have for other creators and use that energy to be better at what you're doing, perfect your own craft, you could be in the same positions that other people that are getting these opportunities are. So I just want you to talk to us about if you have any thoughts on that, because obviously with your success level, I mean, I'm pretty sure you've been experiencing some of this a lot in your career.
Yeah, but listen, like I think a lot of people read like who gets something and who doesn't as like some sort of validation, but also like a hierarchy in a way, but it really isn't. It's every company does it different. So LG does one thing with the Wing, Samsung does something else, OnePlus does something else, Apple does something else. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, they all have their own strategies about who they want to get the device in the hands of first, because they're going to get it early. And then people who have to buy it later feel like they're missing out and they're late or whatever. But at the end of the day, if you're still going to make that video, whether you're first or last, then it shouldn't matter if you got it early from the company or if you get it later and you buy it. It's the same product in your hands. Still do your thing, right? Don't waste your energy hating on who gets it early. It's really just because the company's marketing department had a list. They went down and checked certain boxes and it ended up this way. Not a huge deal. Don't stress over it. You might be in the next batch. You might be in every batch. You might never be in a batch. Don't worry about it.
Absolutely. And like you just said, even if you don't get the product, that does not mean you can't make content. I was also talking about Friday about how a lot of times very successful people like yourself or maybe a Justine, sometimes they're hated on because of your level of success. And our boy Stephen A. Smith said something to the effect like 3 years ago. He made a quote that it's very rare that you'll be a LeBron or a Shaq because they just have rare athletic ability. But anybody could be a Stephen A. Smith. And I feel like anybody could come into tech YouTube and put in the work and put in the grind to be very successful. I mean, we got our boy Andrew Edwards. I mean, he doesn't have the biggest sub count, but he is one of the most successful people in the tech space because he put in that work. So just because you're not at the top doesn't mean that you can't come into the field and have a level of success. The ocean is big, Marques. I mean, there's enough room for all of us to thrive and survive out here for real.
That's the thing. There's two sides to that coin. That's a great point. I think a lot of people, when they see the landscape already thriving and vibrant and diverse and amazing, they also see, well, how do I jump in and stand out? Because like, I didn't join first. Now, how can I be Stephen A. Smith? It's all solidified. There's already a Stephen A. Smith. But I think just the fact that anyone can pick up a camera, I think you were one of the people who were saying, like, you just grabbed your phone, you can start a channel, you can make videos, you can talk tech, you can do whatever. That's how pretty much everyone starts.
Yep.
So there's two sides to the coin. And I think because of YouTube's scale, even if you look at yourself as not that big of a sub count, step back and think about that number. If you saw that many people in a room, or if you had to deliver your opinions to that many people, you wouldn't think that's such a small number.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, you normally on these live streams, I get anywhere from maybe 30 to 60 people at a time. But like you said, if you step into a room of 30 to 60 people, that's a large audience to have like a direct
every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might think, oh, I only get 100 views on every video. If the same 100 people are waiting for your opinion every time you walk into that room and take the mic, that's a lot.
Mm.
That's a lot. So don't forget that.
No doubt, man. And I can attest to it because usually when I do these live streams, I have at least 10 to 15 people waiting for me before I even hit the live button. So like you said, when you get that same audience that comes back over and over again, you definitely have something special on your hands, man. No doubt.
Sure.
So let's transition this over to trust and credibility. Now, I know you and Mr. Mobile have had big talks about this, but the other thing that happens sometimes is that when we do get review units from companies, people kind of think that will take a toll on our credibility because they feel like we won't be as critical as we normally would be if we had just brought the product ourselves. So talk about your objective when you make your video, because I'm pretty sure you've experienced a lot where people might question the things that you put in the video because you got the product for free and things like that. But It's all about establishing the credibility with your audience, because as you know, Marquez, the audience is the most important part of this whole creator audience relationship. Even though we have these relationships with these brands, we can't put that before the credibility that we need to have with our audience. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's facts. I mean, so we're reviewers at the end of the day. Like when you get a new product, we're trying to figure out if it's worth it or not, or evaluating a product. So anytime that can be compromised, that's the last thing you want to do. That's the worst thing. I think when people see a reviewer get something from a company or have a relationship with a brand and immediately assume, oh, that's a vector for compromise or that can go badly, I think that's a little bit of a projection of what they would do if they were in their shoes. Oh, if I got that for free, I would feel pressure to say nice things and keep that relationship going. And I think it's possible that in some early stages, maybe some YouTubers feel that way, but I'm in a position, and a lot of the people you watch are in a position where they're fortunate enough where they can speak their truth and not have to worry about any problems. So at least for me, I can speak for myself. I'm speaking the truth anytime I'm reviewing. If I like these headphones, it's not because I like Sony and I want to make sure they send me the next pair of headphones. It's because these are good. Look at Viper wearing them. It's not because he's not trying to tell people, look how much Sony and I are so close. No, it's because we're telling you these are good. You want another pair of headphones, you can take the risk, but I'm telling you these are good. So that's not coming from some weird compromise. That's just us trying to do our job the best way we can. I get it. You want to be skeptical. You want to make sure you're on your toes and know, but if there is compromise, you want to call it out. But yeah, we got to be smart. Our job is to stay objective, and that's what we're trying our best to do.
No doubt. Shout out to my man, Zach Talk Tech, for the $20 super chat. Thank you, sir. He says, I want to thank Marquez for his full disclosure and the steps he took with the recent Buick video. That was a great example of working with a brand, proper disclosure, and keep the trust with the audience. Well done. I'm glad Zach brought that up. I'm going to get to that next. And thank you, Zach. Yeah. So let's talk about that since Zach brought it up. Recently, you did the full sponsored video for Buick. Now, I'm just curious, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people are curious, how do you decide what brand you do sponsorship for? Because obviously, there are different types of sponsor content that you can do. There's the full dedicated sponsor video that you did with Buick, and then there's other sponsor spots that you do sometimes that you just integrate naturally to other tech videos. Like if you're doing an iPhone review and NordVPN wants to sponsor a section of that video, you will naturally integrate that NordVPN spot into your iPhone review. But right. I guess my broader question is, if you do a dedicated spot like you did for Buick, how do you decide which content like that gets a dedicated sponsored spot on your channel?
Yeah, and we've done one more since then. I like when I can just simplify it into like the idea of, is it a good idea for a video or not? Is it a good video in our minds? Now, working with a brand is complicated already. And when you work with a brand on an entire video instead of just like a segment, like a 60-second segment, it becomes an order of magnitude more complicated. So that's something we work on. This is like our first and second time ever doing it. So it is tough. But for the Buick video, for example, we are thinking, okay, Buick wants to highlight a car. And that's all they really came to us with the idea of. We want to show off this Buick on your channel. And we're thinking, okay, well, there's probably a way we can work together. I want to sort of take it from the autofocus angle. where I've shown all these high-tech cars. What do we do? An Aventador, an NSX, a Tesla. We've done some pretty crazy stuff.
Yep.
Let's see if we can spin and sort of take the angle of like, what kind of tech is actually in a regular car today? Like if I'm going to buy, you don't have to say it in the video, but a Camry or an Accord or a Buick or whatever, what's going to show up in that car? And Buick went, all right, yeah, that's actually a good idea. So we're trying to brainstorm an idea as ways where we can actually work together once Buick comes to us. And it turned out to be a good idea. Now, again, working with Buick, they have all the auto industry. You always see a ton of fine print in the bottom of everything. And the more you work with them, the more you realize why that's there. So, of course, this video has a ton of different versions and alterations. And I think there were 7 different versions before we landed on the final one.
Wow.
We've changed the way we work with brands since we worked with Buick because of that process. And it's a learning experience. But to answer your question, that's how we come up with who to work with and who not to is basically what makes a good video. What idea seems like it would actually flow well and be enjoyable to watch, what I want to watch.
Definitely. And obviously, as you know, you have to be careful with when you do those dedicated sponsored videos, because they usually receive a lot of backlash because people are like, oh my God, this is a commercial, blah, blah, blah. But people don't understand that you do this for a living. You do this full time. So you have to have a way to make income. And like you, I think when I brought this up to you originally, when you did the video, you told me that, hey, it's fine. This allows me to pay for better, more regular videos in the future. So don't be so down on me doing a sponsored video, because in the future, it allows me to bring you more of the content that you love in the future. So I think you need to understand that sponsored content sometimes is a necessary evil in order for that creator to provide you bigger and better videos in the future.
Yeah. Our goal is to make it as little of an evil as possible.
Right.
Because you see, as soon as you see this whole video is sponsored by, you're like, oh, here we go.
Yep.
Here comes the ad. All right. Let's see what it is. But we're trying to give you a good video anyway. And if you like it, then great. If you don't, you're on to the next one. But yeah, you're right. We have a strategy, we have a content strategy at the beginning of the year. We know what we want to have to pay for. We have a studio to pay for. We have staff to pay for. We have travel. Although 2020, we didn't really have much travel. But the whole idea is it's a subsidizer. It's enabling the stuff you see in Techtober, especially when we're just full tilt.
Okay. I need you to repeat what you just said. Can you please like break down everything that you just said as it relates to the things that you have to pay for? Because again, I don't know if you realize, especially with a creator of your size and your team, you have a lot of stuff that you need to pay for. The money just doesn't go to Marquez. So break that down again for us, please.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I think maybe a lot of people don't realize this, but the business of MKBHD is separate from a person, Marquez. So everyone always likes to go, look how much money Marquez has. Marquez takes a salary from the MKBHD business. That's number one. If you didn't, you'd be insane for tax reasons. So number one, we pay taxes, that business pays taxes. I'm sure, as you know, you pay for the equipment that you end up buying. If you buy a camera, if you buy these headphones, if you buy that mic, that's an expense. Then there's the people that you pay that you work with. So we obviously have people on the team, we call it team MKBHD, whatever you want to call it. They all have salaries. They all have benefits. They all have salary tax. It just adds up. Then the studio that we work in. So this is not a studio we own. We're leasing inside of a building. So that's a monthly expense. And I bet nobody in this chat would guess how much we pay for that studio. So I'm just saying that's a significant amount that we have to allot every single month. Yep. To make sure we pay those bills, keep those lights on, keep that internet going. And then on top of that, then we're into traveling and we're into all these other miscellaneous expenses. But yeah, it's not nothing. We make videos, but we also have to enable our video making.
Yeah, like I said, it's funny because when these things occur, like you doing a sponsored video, people are like, how much money does Marquez need? Marquez and greedy, blah, blah, blah. And like he just highlighted. The man has a studio to pay for. He has a team to pay for. He has taxes to pay. Like, and that stuff gets expensive, especially when you do it at the scale of an MKBHD. So we need to consider everything and not just see what we see up front. Just realize that there's a whole business to what MKBHD is and what he does.
Yeah. And if you look at a public, that's the difference between like a YouTuber you might know or like a public company. Like I'm just going to use like Facebook or Google as an example or whatever, where the company's primary goal is to appease shareholders by making as much money as possible. You see how much Apple just said they made in the last quarter, what was it, $60 billion, and their investors were disappointed in them. Apple has so much money, and they got disappointed investors that they didn't make enough money. We're not under that type of pressure to just make tons of money, right? But we still have to make money in order to create as our craft. If we didn't have the support of people who watch the videos, that would be less videos for us to make. So it's all a cycle. At least we're not a public company working for shareholders. That would be something different.
Definitely, no doubt. Thank you for breaking that down, because I want people to understand everything that goes into you and what you do, because I get annoyed when people give creators grief for doing sponsored content. I'm just thinking to myself, how do you think your favorite A-list celebrities live? Why do you think they do all these brand deals and spots? They're trying to live. You know, you got to make some money somehow. How would you feel if Marquez came to your job and got mad at you at how you make your money? I don't think you would like that too well. I want people to understand how this stuff works so they could calm down. Okay. So the other thing that I was kind of ranting about or talking about Friday night was the fact that the hate that people have for people that are in positions that they are not in. If you redirect that hate into making yourself better, then that will get you a lot further in life than just focusing that hate on other people. But a part of that is not being complacent. You have to constantly have that desire and that yearning to get better. You are a perfect example, because you shoot an AK for no reason, because nobody can watch content in AK right now.
There's a reason, though.
No, go on. I'm not, you're, all right, go ahead.
There's a reason. Okay. You hear about people who shoot in 4K and then publish in 1080p. It's so they have room to crop around and adjust the frame for sharpness. That's the same thing from 8K to 4K. I publish in 4K. So that's one thing. But also, I'd be fine to shoot in 4K. I shoot on a certain sensor that has a look and a workflow that I really like. It's a huge sensor. It's got incredible color science. It happens to be 8K. All right, great. I'll take that too. But I shoot on the Monstro because I love that sensor.
Okay, but that's where I was getting. I was joking that you shoot an 8K for no reason, but I understand that part of the reason why you shoot an 8K is because you are always striving to be the best creator and put out the best content that you can possibly make. So talk to us about that constant drive and motivation for you personally to put out the absolute best content, even if most people don't even have an 8K display to watch your videos on. Talk about just that drive and desire for you to put out that top level content, even though you're like maybe one of the few people that can actually appreciate it.
It's twofold. It's for you and it's for me. Mm-hmm. It's for you because I want to make a video that I would want to watch and that hopefully you'd want to watch. So I'm trying to make the best possible video, the most entertainment value, the most information per minute, the most, you know, valuable video you can watch, and the best quality, hopefully. I'm trying to make that. But it's for me too, because I'm a professional video maker, technically, and I really enjoy the production process. This is something I hear a lot about, and people, you know, they get a camera and they're like, which camera do I gotta get to just give me the best videos? Honestly, you can make very good videos with a not so great camera if you have a process that you enjoy and you get into lights and you get into color correction and editing and all that stuff. So the fact that I get to shoot on that sensor and that camera every day, and I get to mess with this incredible workflow that you hear about in film school and you're like, well, I don't think I'll ever get to touch that sort of workflow. And then you actually get to do it. It's part for me too. I enjoy making videos. So it's twofold. Hopefully it's a win-win for everybody.
I don't think there's anybody watching or listening that's going to argue with that, because again, your content.
I hope there's nobody complaining.
No. I don't.
Because no. I publish in 4K. I upload in 4K, I should say. And then YouTube sometimes decides to allow it to publish in 4K. Have you seen this? My videos get stuck at 1080p sometimes now. It's kind of rough.
Yeah, I think somebody was saying that about your recent iPhone video. They thought you might have shot it in 1080p, but I'm guessing you didn't shoot that video in 1080p.
I don't shoot videos in 1080p. I shoot my videos as high quality as I can, and YouTube goes, yeah, this one, sure. This one, maybe.
Did y'all detect the tone of his voice? He's like, 1080p, that's peasant work. I don't do peasant work.
I shoot 1080p.
Look at the face!
High definition. No, I think at this point, every camera that I have shoots 4K. My phone, 4K. Maybe this webcam is 1080p. I'll take that back.
This is great. Somebody clipped this part. This is great. Oh my God. Shout out to those of y'all listening on audio only this week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Vibe Drive with me and my man Marquez Brownlee. If you're not familiar with Mr. Brownlee's content, and you should be, his channel information will be in the show notes of this podcast. So definitely go down there. Give him a look. He is probably the best creator on tech YouTube. He's been doing it for over a decade. He is the man. So definitely go check him out. Also, if you want to support the podcast or donate, there should be a Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes. It is not required, but anything that you're willing to contribute, greatly, greatly appreciate it. If you happen to be listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a rating or review as it helps more people discover the podcast and it helps us try to get back into the top 200 of tech podcasts on Apple. So please, if you're on Apple Podcasts, consider leaving that rating or review. So I just watched your Pixel 5 review earlier today, and the reason why I'm so late watching it is because I didn't want to watch it because I knew I was going to be making a review myself because I knew they were sending me a device. I just put out my video a couple of days ago, so I got around to watching your video. And we had some similar points in both our videos. And the one I want to highlight right now is they've heard me rant about this before, but I want to talk about the tech snobs who get on my nerves. And I'm pretty sure they get on your nerves too. When I put out my when I put out the video on Twitter, I'll link it to the review. I had tech snobs coming at me like, the Pixel 5 and 765 Snapdragon, it's not even 865. I'm thinking to myself, that does not matter in real world use. The average person cannot discern the difference between an 865 and a 765. They don't care. Why are you so caught up in your laboratory tests and your benchmarks when the average everyday Joe doesn't even know anything about that stuff? They don't care. And you said the same thing in your video. I was like, wow, even Marquez said that. So can you please talk about why these tech snobs are just out of pocket, man? They out of pocket, Marquez.
I agree with that, and I want to come back at you with the 90 versus 120 because I think we might disagree on that.
I'll start
with the chip. I understand where people are coming from because they're going, okay, well, let's see. I got Pixel 4 last year, and I got Pixel 5 this year, and Pixel 5, which is a bigger number, and it's the newer flagship phone, is a worse chip, a slower performer on paper than Pixel 4. Insert rage here. That's just the simple mindset of that. Thanks, Siri. Why are you popping? I don't care. I'm not talking to you, Siri. Where was that? Oh, so the point is, phones were getting really, really, really good really quickly and have sort of leveled off to the point where, like, the difference between an 865 or an 865 Plus or an 855 or a 765G or whatever you want to call it is like, yeah, there's little differences on paper, but at the end of the day, they're all pretty good and they're all going to hopefully last a couple of years until you get your next phone, right? So if they can use a cheaper 765G, a more efficient possibly 765G, save you some money, save you some battery, and cost you maybe, you know, a little bit less and actually be a reasonably same level of performance, I think you'd make the same choice. So that's what Google did. We'll see about future proofing because phones are coming out now with the 765G. I don't mind any of them at this point. But what I do notice the difference between is the 90 hertz on that phone and 120 hertz on some phones that I've used this year. I didn't think I would notice it that much, but I just came from testing the OnePlus 8T right before I went to Pixel 5. This is like the middle of Techtober, so like everything was coming out. And immediately I was just like, this feels slower. It just doesn't feel as smooth. So I do point that in my review, like people, you probably will notice this smoothness difference, and it's not because of the chip, it's because of the refresh rate. But you know, go check it out in the store. See it for yourself. You might not even care.
Okay. I'm going to shock the hell out of you right now. But okay, as far as it relates to 90 hertz and 120 hertz, I'm going to partially agree with you because I didn't notice this at first because I use iPhone. And iPhone, I don't know how Apple or what kind of magic voodoo that they do, but whatever they do, their 60 hertz iPhone displays are buttery smooth. But Marquez, I have in one hand a Galaxy Fold 2, which runs at 120 hertz. And in the other hand, I have an LG Wing that runs at 60 hertz. And my God, it is literally night and day. Like, this feels like I'm like scrolling in mud compared to using this. So there's a definite difference that I discern between using this 120 hertz panel versus this 60 hertz panel. Maybe it's just an Android thing and Android phones aren't really optimized, like Apple optimizing the iPhone for scrolling. But when you use both of these and you know it is, you notice the difference between you notice the difference going from 120 to 60. Oh my God, I'm like, wow. So this is what we've been talking about the entire time.
This is what I've been talking about. Now, I agree with you. iPhones are the smoothest 60 hertz phones that I've used. Yep. Their touch sample refresh is higher. It's super well optimized. Their displays are incredible. So those 60 hertz phones are great smoothness for a 60 hertz phone. But I have no doubt in my mind if they switch to a 120 hertz panel, you would notice. And it's because they make the iPad Pro. I use it every day and I switch to the iPhone and I go, I can feel that little difference. And I just think if I'm spending $1,000, $1,100, $1,200 for a phone, I want the best phone. And I feel like that little difference would be nice to actually feel.
Okay. But I'm going to come back at you now because I know how much you love 120 hertz. But let's say Apple did make a 120 hertz iPhone. We put that iPhone next to a 60 hertz iPhone. Do you really think that the average person will be able to discern the difference between a 60 hertz iPhone and a 120 hertz iPhone?
That's one question. Will the average person notice? No. Mm-hmm. But for the small percentage of people that's trying to get, that's watching a tech video, that's trying to discern, because remember, we make tech videos. The people watching these videos are not the average person.
Right, right.
I think that specific, if you're going to a high-end restaurant and you're giving someone like this fancy steak that costs $120 versus like the $29 steak or whatever, will the average person really notice the difference? Maybe, oh, this one's a little juicier, I guess, whatever, not a big deal, I'll eat either one. But if you're paying that much and you care about what you're getting for your money, you would want that. And I think the same thing is true for a small percent of iPhone customers where they're trying to get the best phone. They want Apple to make the best phone. I almost put this in my review. I almost said if they got rid of the notch and switched to 120 hertz, I would be fine using an iPhone forever. That would be fine. I would love that phone. But they didn't do it, and it's not in the review. But I think if they had actually gotten me to 120 hertz, the person who thinks like me and sees 120 hertz screens like me would really appreciate it.
Right, and I completely agree with you. The hardcore tech nerd, I mean, they've been arguing about this all summer long. They definitely noticed that difference, but we know that Apple is selling phones to the mass public. They're not really selling phones to the tech nerd per se. So when Apple has to make that decision about what technology is necessary for us to make the most bottom line possible across the entire mass consumer, I don't know if a 120 hertz display is that big of a factor in Apple's mind.
I agree. The other thing is, I said my iPhone review, Apple makes decisions all the time that go directly against that. Well, they'll really spend a lot of time optimizing for something and even starting to advertise and talk about something that the average person is just never going to notice. I mean, you take like the new chips, for example, they threw LiDAR in there.
Yep.
How many people are going to notice LiDAR in the new iPhone? They're going to get the new iPhone and they're never going to notice that it has a little faster autofocus at night and that you can do better AR. They just don't use that part. But as part of Apple's broader vision for the future, AR is important, LiDAR is better for AR, it's in the phone. So them not having 120 hertz display in the new iPhone Pro, to me, signals either one, they didn't think it would be ideal battery-wise, or two, they don't think it's important for the future. And I disagree with the second one. I think it was a battery decision.
Yeah, but from what I'm hearing, it was definitely a battery factor into why they didn't do it this year. But I'm guessing they will do it next year for sure.
I hope so. I really hope so.
I hope so too. I'm tired of arguing about this. let's make the tech nerd happy in 2021. Also, shout out to Anthony Beltre for the super chat. Marquez has a whole smartphone award at the end of the year that he will make that determination.
Yeah, I can't just be giving that out now.
Get that out now.
Yeah.
I was telling him on Twitter that I do my own smartphone award now, and it's going to be hard as hell this year because there's so many phones I've used this year, and it's just like there's a lot of good phones out there for sure, man. But
I had a really interesting one. We were talking about this like in a studio about like best compact phone, and we're like, well, iPhone 12 mini is going to come out, and my best compact phone of the year has been an iPhone. I think every year has just been the smallest iPhone, just the best compact phone. But you know what came up? You know what's technically smaller than the iPhone 12 mini? Is the Z Flip 2.
Oh,
I would technically smaller. If you fold it up, it's a smaller dimensionally. I think it weighs less. You have the Razr technically also. So these folding phones are kind of throwing wrenches in some of the, what's the best big phone? Is it the folding big phone or is it just a big phone? I don't know yet. It'll be interesting.
Definitely. Okay, so now we got to talk about Apple, because obviously the big thing with Apple this year, Marquez, which I'm pretty sure you talked about in your videos, and that for the first time, there is no charger in the box with iPhone 12. This has been a big thing throughout iPhone season. I personally don't really agree with it, especially when they try to message that they're taking care of the environment. Like I said on Friday, I understand that Apple is environmentally conscious. They've been that way since Steve Jobs was alive. I'm not questioning that. What I'm questioning is that they're talking about eliminating brick this year to be more environmentally friendly, but at the same time, you are selling the charger in a separate box that most people are going to need because you're including a cable in the box that is incompatible with most of the charging bricks right lying around people's houses. So I'm curious your thoughts, Marquez, on the no charger in the iPhone box this year.
Yeah. So I've included my my bits and pieces of thoughts on it in some videos and in the unboxing. I talked about it in the iPhone 12 reaction video. I talked about it. I'm considering making an entire video on the merits of a phone with no ports at all. And like, is this even a good idea? Now, yeah, so Apple getting rid of the charger in the box. I think a lot of people keep saying they're doing it because it's environmentally friendly. I think they're doing it and justifying it because it happens to be environmentally friendly in that one sliver of if you just look at packaging for the iPhone. But there's a lot of other benefits for Apple and a lot of other downsides for users that aren't in that better for the environment explanation.
Yes.
So yeah, they're making more money per phone. They're shipping more for more volume, more efficiently. There's all these other things to consider. I think if there's any company that can be first and get away with it, it's Apple. They've done this before. They've gotten rid of things we thought we needed before and made money off of them before. But yeah, it's definitely it just happens to be, they're like, all right, we're going to do this thing and we need an alibi pretty much like right on stage. So what are we going to say? You know what? Someone in the board meeting was like, you know, it happens to be really efficient to ship twice as many boxes on every plane. Why don't we say it's environmentally friendly? And they were like, yeah, we'll put her on the roof with the solar panels and we'll say it's for the environment. So yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, I am in total agreement with you. We are not saying that Apple isn't environmentally conscious because we know they are. Again, they have been this way since Steve Jobs was living. So we know that Apple cares about the environment. But this particular situation smells kind of funny, and it is kind of hypocritical when on one hand they are taking chargers out of the box, but on the other hand they're including a lightning to USB-C cable in the box, which is incompatible with the numbers of chargers that are probably laying around people's houses, because even us tech people don't have many USB-C bricks laying around. They're very rare.
You know what fascinates me? Because there's a whole genre of basically YouTube channels that will like defend everything Apple does, no matter what. It's just, they just defend it. And the explanation I've heard from these channels is, well, if you don't have that new brick, well, they're not including a charger in the box, but you already have a brick and a lightning cable for it. So just keep using that. And the day that you want to upgrade to fast charging, then you can buy a new brick and you'll already have the cable that Apple gave you for free. That's their explanation. And I get it. What I want to hear from them is, when Apple gets rid of the port, what are they going to say? I don't know. We'll see what Apple says. They'll probably parrot that, but I'm very curious.
Yeah, and we definitely can tell that Apple is gradually moving towards a portless iPhone, especially with this MagSafe stuff that is coming out. What are your thoughts on the MagSafe charger?
It's all right. I really don't use it much because I just wireless charge my phone like on a regular wireless charger, actually on a Pixel stand next to my bed. But it's fine. I've seen these couple weird reports of discoloration. I've had no problems with mine. I was concerned it would like leave marks on the back of the phone if I did it too many times, and they all just wiped off. So I think it's fine. I don't know that it's this amazing future for wireless power delivery. Wireless charging is still not very efficient. It's not very environmentally friendly. So we'll see. It's all right. It's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Right now, I think the advertised speeds are 15 watts, which is okay. But like you said, it's not very fast. So we'll see what they do. Hopefully, when they do decide to go fully portless, we will have much faster wireless charging speeds than we do now. Because like you said, right now, it's pretty inefficient for what we are normally accustomed to. Yeah. All right. So now I got to shift the conversation over to foldables and things that are weird. Because like I just showed you, I have the Fold 2 and I have an LG Wing. I have a Fold 2 partly because of you. Because you and Soldier Don't Best and Michael Fisher and Max Weinbach and Shane Starr and George Monterey, none of you all was shut up last year about the original Fold. So I'm like, you know what? They're waxing poetic about this Fold. I'm going to make sure I get my hands on a Fold 2 this year.
Yeah.
And I have Bruce Wayne, which is what I call my Fold 2. I call it Bruce Wayne. I have it, and I am shutting the hell up now because I understand what y'all were talking about last year. This thing is amazing, Marquez. My God.
Yeah, man. It's like, if you saw one person raving about it, you might be a little skeptical. If two people were raving about it, you'd be like, I don't know about this. But we're all reviewing the same phone. And right. We all have basically the same thoughts on this, which is like, yo, this is impressive. Yeah.
Bro, I'm over here hoping to include, hey, like our friend Colin Singala, hoping to include, hey, hoping to include, hey, I'm doing a lot of hoping to include, hey, I'm doing a lot of that.
It's fun.
This is my favorite device of 2020. Like, I mean, I know iPhone 12 Pro Max is coming soon, but I don't think anything could have matched the level of fun I'm having with this Fold 2. This is legit. This is the real deal for sure, man.
Yeah, no regrets.
And the LG Wing, I'm enjoying the LG Wing too. It's different. I mean,
different tone. I noticed, and the LG Wing. I'm having fun with it too.
No, it's not like that. I like the Wing. Like when I first announced it, I'm like, all right. I mean, it's different. It's weird, but I understand it has some practical application. I love the multitasking, like being able to watch YouTube up here and do Twitter down there. That's amazing. I don't know. I don't know if I'm having much fun with this than I am with my Fold 2, though, but I'm having fun with this as well. But yeah, the LG Wing, like, it's different. But the cool thing about the LG Wing, Marquez, is that in that built-in gimbal, man, I don't know how much you've used it, but that built-in gimbal is thick.
It's cool. I think when they were making this phone, they built it with this form factor in mind. So they could have done this gimbal thing in like any phone, but it was perfect for the Wing because they'd have the control set up the same way. They're like, this is the phone we're going to do this gimbal thing in. So it's cool. It's a good demonstration of things you can't do that well on other form factors.
Yeah, the LG Wing, I believe that they are definitely onto something. I hope they make follow-up devices because it'll be interesting to see where they take the Wing in the future. But the first iteration, I'm enjoying it. I am enjoying it, definitely. So I know that you have been very busy this October and you're probably going to be busy until November. I know I am at the very least. I know you got all the iPhones, or I think you got most of the iPhones. Obviously you change phones a lot, especially lately, because you're reviewing a bunch of different phones. But what is the phone that you keep coming back to these days? What is your like go-to?
Good question. OnePlus 8 Pro is the phone that has my SIM again. I still don't, I don't love everything about it. I hate the curved sides still. but I came from the OnePlus 8T and I had Oxygen OS 11, and I liked a lot of things about that phone. The flat screen, but then again, it was much worse cameras. So I wanted better version of cameras for that phone, and I happened to lose the flat screen, but this is the one I'm going with. I think it was Note 20 Ultra for a while, and the Samsung software kind of just wore on me for a while, and I have the luxury where I can just go, I don't want that anymore, and just switch, which most people won't. They'll find a way to adapt around the Samsung software experience, but for me, it was just a little clumsy, I guess, with my workflow. So Oxygen OS 11 update came to OnePlus 8 Pro, and I'm using it again. But I have my iPhone SIM and a 12 Pro, and it's Pacific Blue, and it's great. It's shiny.
Oh, there you go. Now, I guess it's a dumb question, but when the Pro Max come out, I'm guessing the iPhone that you use full-time will probably be the Pro Max, correct?
I'm guessing it will be. I don't want to immediately give Apple credit for doing everything they said, but it should have better cameras. It should have better battery life. It will have a bigger screen. I think that's probably the phone I'm going to want to use. But there is also something nice about the smaller form factor. And if the camera difference isn't too much, or if battery isn't actually that much better, or if they don't really deliver on all their promises, I might come back to this phone for being smaller.
Yeah, definitely understandable. I'm usually they deliver what they're, especially with the Pro Max, but I guess we'll find out in a few days here. Shout out to Keep It Techie for the super chat. He says, hey, Vibe, can you ask Marquez what are his thoughts on protecting user privacy on either phone? Do you value privacy over convenience? I only ask because I dislike my phone tracking everything I do daily. Just curious.
Yeah, that's a good point that it's basically you're trading privacy for convenience usually.
Yep.
And it's so crazy. I use an Android phone and I'm like, this company knows exactly where I'm at and what I'm doing and everything, but I'll be damned if it isn't convenient. My God, it is incredible. Google knowing everything about like where I'm about to fly and what I'm about to buy and where I'm about to navigate to is very helpful. Siri doesn't know much about me, and Siri is not very helpful.
No.
I like that Siri doesn't know much about me, but I don't like that Siri is not very helpful. So you kind of have to just pick one or the other. My personal values are somewhere in between. If you value privacy, you should go the privacy-focused company way. That would be Apple. And if you focus on convenience and don't care as much about privacy, well, Siri won't help you much. So Google Assistant.
So there is no way in hell I'm talking to you right now on November 1st, 2020, without getting into next generation consoles. We got to talk about them. Now, I know you got a Xbox Series X, you got a PS5. I'm curious, what is the first game that you played on the PS5?
I'm not allowed to say. I have been testing both for sure.
Right.
The behind the scenes experiences for each one is actually very different. And I think both the reviews will show a lot of that when they all come out. But they're both really interesting consoles. I came from the PlayStation 4. So that's my like reference point, PlayStation 4 Pro. And on that console, I played NBA 2K. I played like a couple other like random like Resogun, like random fun indie game type stuff, and Need for Speed. And then on Xbox, I was like Forza, and then whatever else happens to look cool. So that's basically how I'm lifting and transferring and playing. But like the next gen gaming experience is at different levels of readiness for each console.
So you can't tell us what you've been playing on the PS5 at all?
Can't say it. Yeah. I can't speak to any of my experience before the review. The embargo says I just talk about hardware and that's it.
Okay. So, all right. So let's stick to what you can talk about. You just made a video about the DualSense PS5 controller. Talk about your experience with that, because I think a lot of people were saying, I think you even said in your video, that that's probably the most next-gen thing out of anything that's happening with these consoles.
For real. Like, the more you think about it, like, okay, what are you expecting from a next-gen console? Next-gen graphics. All right, so they both have better CPU, GPU, faster load times, faster drives. You get that with both. You get the games. You get a different UI with each. At the end of the day, boom, next-gen. All right, great. But what's different about this controller, I don't have it with me, but the DualSense controller has really, really high quality haptics. It's not just bigger rumbles. It's like the Apple Watch has it, the haptic engine, the iPhone has it. You feel that little tap. It's a big version of that in each stick, and it's really good. So the demos, yeah, you feel like there's stuff inside the controller moving around when there isn't. You would feel like you're actually carving ice when you're not. You'd feel like you're squeezing a spring with the adaptive controller when you're not. And the more I thought about it, I was like, honestly, next-gen controllers is like even more next-gen feeling than just better graphics. Like, we're just going to get better graphics no matter what. PCs get better graphics, consoles get better graphics. But better controller feel is so important to the gaming experience. So I'm curious how this all is going to play out with developers and how much of that they include in their games in the future. But I felt a certain way about that controller, so I decided to sort of lift that from the review, and we'll see how people feel.
Yeah, I think you make a big point. It's going to be up to developers to implement the hardware that's in the controller, because you can have all the haptics and stuff in the world in the controller, but if the developers don't include parts of their game to take advantage of that controller's hardware, then it's not really much to do about nothing. So I'm very curious, like you are, to see how these developers put to use those haptics in the PS5 controller. I think it could be pretty amazing if they actually use it.
Yeah, it's like when a new you know, Apple device, let's say a new iPad comes out with a new chip and a new LiDAR and everything. If the apps don't update, you might as well have the old iPad just a little faster. But it really feels next gen once the developers plug into those new pieces of hardware and improvements and actually enable new experiences with it. So I was like. Brainstorming in my video, I was like, well, obviously a gun trigger on the shoulder button, like feeling that resistance. And it's impressively strong. Like, you feel that spring coil recoil. I was like, that's gotta be a thing. And I play sports games, so I'm like, all right, dribbling a basketball, I'm gonna feel it through the controller. But like, what about maybe hockey? I don't know, maybe soccer, you different strengths of it. I don't know yet. We're just gonna have to see how it plays out. But I'm hoping they actually build it in.
Yeah, that would be cool if they are able to highlight and take advantage of the next gen haptics and things like that, because that stuff is pretty cool. So we shall see what they do with that. So we talked a little bit about your experience with we talked about your experience with the PS5. Let's talk a little bit about what your experience is, or what you are allowed to talk about with the Xbox Series X.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, it doesn't have the fancy controller. I was playing it again yesterday. It still has a nice controller, obviously, and it does have the vibration motors in it. It's just not as exaggerated and it's not as articulate, I guess is the word. So it's still fine. Mm-hmm. But generally, the thing you're going to notice basically once you get it and start playing games is the speed, the loading speed, the speed between cutscenes, the speed flipping between games, all that stuff is like great. The new UI, you're still, it feels less like a console than the PS5. It's a little bit more organized as like a media machine, where the PS5 is more game focused, I guess I found, just because of the UI. But I mean, if you're an Xbox person, you're going to be used to it. You got your Microsoft account, you got, you know, all your apps and games loaded up. It's good. It's good.
No doubt. I need to add you on PSN. So if you could DM me your PSN account, that'd be cool if you're comfortable with that.
Sure. Yeah.
Sweet. We'll have to play some 2K sometime because I brought 2K21 for the PS5, so we'll get at the game.
Yep.
No doubt. Did you watch any of the NBA playoffs this year?
I did. Riveting. I miss it. I was just remembering, I was watching highlights from the finals. I think it was game 5 where Jimmy kind of went off and LeBron was basically responding back and forth. Like, I missed that. That was good. I'm very impressed that they pulled that off.
Yeah. And they're talking about bringing in the league back in December, which some players are like, that's a little too soon. So I guess we'll see how they can do that. I don't know. It's going to be weird.
I get it. Because like, a lot of them feel like they just played, but a lot of them also just had like 6 months off. So
yeah, and I think that's the point that Stephen A. Smith was making when he was on First Take. He was like, y'all had 6 months off in the middle of the season. Y'all can't be complaining about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you had 4 months off in the middle of the season for the shutdown. And then if you didn't get invited to the bubble, you just didn't play for the rest of the year. So you had like 8 months off. So, you know, there's a lot of teams that like eliminated in the first round. They've had 4 months off, whatever it is. And also you're going to get paid like how many millions of dollars again is your salary? Like you can make it happen, I'm sure. But I get it. They're all human. A little bit of a holiday break.
No doubt. Shout out to my man, Tech King, Mike, for the super chat. $10. Thank you, sir. Xbox Master Race. Man, you better miss me with this stuff. I told you, Mike, don't start. Don't start, Mike. Don't start. I mean, but then, like I told you, I got both consoles coming through. I mean, I'm playing both. So it don't even matter. But
you order both?
I know I ordered both. Yep.
All right.
I went on a live stream tear in September. I live stream every day in September and raised enough money to order both. So, yes.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Sure. My
Tech people number, man.
Yeah. Definitely. I already got three phones I need to review in like the first 2 weeks of November. It's kind of crazy. It's like, yeah, it's nuts. So I'm going to get you out of here on this last question from me. I'm pretty sure you have observed this year, there have been kind of like an explosion on Twitter or in the tech space at the very least with all these Apple leaked and no-name Apple leakers coming out of the woodwork trying to gain clout and things like that. So my question to you, Marquez, do you think that leaks have ruined these tech events?
Do I think leaks have ruined tech events? It would depend on who you're ruining it for. I think for some people, yes. If you were one of the people who was waiting to watch a tech event for the surprise of it, I think it's a very narrow group of people. But yeah, that leaks are obviously ruining it for them. But I also think most people who are watching a tech event are watching it to get the latest information as soon as it's available. And ultimately, that's what a leak is, if they're correct. So a good, accurate leak doesn't ruin the event for the person who's hopefully trying to get information quickly. But for the companies, yeah, it ruins the event because now less people have to watch it or care or fall into that hype of their marketing spin on their message. I have seen a lot of these leaks pop up. I kind of wonder about that long term. Like if you're just a leaker, which some people are that, they're just leaking things. All of that, I don't know, just has such a short shelf life for content. Like you think about the half-life of a video on YouTube is maybe a couple weeks.
Yep.
The half-life of a tweet is like a couple hours. Like the life of a leak is up until it's confirmed and then, you know, it's useless again. So as a content producer, I guess I think of it as a content strategy and I'm like, this doesn't seem sustainable, but I'm sure no one actually cares about that part of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just people trying to put out leaks so they can get like instant fame and things like that. And I mean, you got to be right, though. You just can't put that stuff out and be wrong, because if you're wrong, then you're automatically done.
True. Credibility. That's over with.
Mr. Brown, Martinez, thank you for joining me again. I appreciate it. Always an awesome conversation, man. Definitely.
Yeah, I can count on you for the good questions, and shout out to the chat for bringing me even more. So thanks for having me, and we'll do it again sometime.
Shout out to those of y'all who listened on audio only this week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Vibe Drive with me and my dude, MKBHD. Again, if you want to go check out his content, his link to his channel will be in the show notes. You should definitely go check him out. He made the best tech content in the world, so definitely go give him a look. He is legit. If you guys want to support the podcast, donate to the podcast, there should be a Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes as well. As always, it is not required, but anything that you're willing to contribute, greatly, greatly appreciate it. Also, if you happen to be listening on Apple Podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review, as it help more people discover the show, help me get back into the top 200 of tech podcasts. So definitely, if you're on Apple Podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review. But until the next time, people, This your boy Viper, the man about tech. You know where to find me. So come back for more.